WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media
News
app.
I'm Andy Field. Negotiators expected to work through the holiday weekend toward a deal to raise the debt ceiling.
If Americans are counting on payments from the government, should they start making backup plans at this point in case?
No, I wouldn't worry about that.
ABC's Rachel Scott speaking to House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Republican-led Texas House of Representatives recommending Attorney General Ken Paxton be impeached. Their investigation found Paxton allegedly committed a number of crimes, including felony offenses. Paxton denies wrongdoing. Baltimore schools today honored 19 students killed by violence in the past year.
The slaughter is not normal, and we cannot accept it as normal, or we are not only lost as individuals, we are lost as a community.
CEO Sonia Santelices. President Biden tapping Air Force General C.Q. Brown to be the next Joint Chiefs of Staff chair. This is ABC News. France putting into effect a 2021 ban on short-haul domestic flights in order to cut down on carbon emissions. Only applies to cities that have regular fast rail service between them. Could the same ban work in the U.S.?
Environmental groups say while the U.S. is not set up with rail to cut short-haul flights, what France is doing is a good experiment to see how it works. Carter Rubin of the Natural Resources Defense Council tells me there is an appetite in the U.S. to not deal with air travel when going a relatively short distance.
I think there's a desire for Americans to have much better alternatives to flying and driving 300-400-mile distances between cities.
But besides the D.C., New York, Boston corridor, there aren't many options in most parts of the U.S. Alex Stone, ABC News.
A New York City judge today set a May 27th trial date for next spring for former Trump campaign chief Steve Bannon. Bannon faces state charges that he defrauded donors of the We Build the Wall online fundraising campaign. Andy Field, ABC News.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Krebscast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Mantner. Here's what you need to know. Two Republican lawmakers from Green Bay want the next state budget to include $2 million to help pay for the cost of the Packers hosting the NFL draft in 2025. Representative David Steffen and Senator Robert Cowell say the event comes with a total price tag of $7.5 million. Packers estimate nearly 250,000 people will attend the draft in Green Bay, generating $94 million across the state and $20 million locally. 3 days after a massive fire broke out at Oak Creek Wood Products in the town of Polk, the fire is still smoldering. A statement from the company out on Wednesday said the fire started in a large mulch pile, spread to stacks of wood pallets, and then to two buildings. Over 45 departments responded to help fight the fire when it broke out Sunday evening. The cause isn't yet known. I'm Jane Mantner. This is Civic Media News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes, don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know what's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens. And I'll tell you what, it's more fun than tipping cows. And actually, you shouldn't really tip the cows, okay? They don't tip as easy as they think, and they might kick you in the... Never mind.
Join us daily at TheRickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So about a month ago, you may remember, I was in Washington, D.C. for a Patriotic Millionaires event. And, you know, they have a conference every year and they, you know, they go through, you know, this is what we're doing, this is what we're working on. And one of the things I learned that they're working on while I was there is they're talking about taxes in a place called Whiteville, North Carolina. And it's nonpartisan. They in fact, they want everybody of every political stripe to come in to talk about taxes on a non-political basis and how we best fund the things we need, what rates we should have, and point out the fact that, you know, the very well-to-do have been walking away for a very long time. And maybe it's time we bring this back. I've been asking for a long time, you know, what could you reunite the country? This could be part of that. And here to share some thoughts on the project that they're doing, I've asked Kat Hadley to come talk with us. Kat is the state campaign manager for the American Agenda, the good folks over at the Patriotic Millionaires. Kat, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So this is, you know, I've been asking for a long time, you know, what are the things that could draw the country, reunite the country around a common cause, around a common idea? You know, we talk about common sense, something's got to be common. And I think taxation, when you explain it in certain ways, can be that thing that brings us together. So tell me, what are you guys doing and what is this American agenda that you're working on?
Yeah. I am the manager of the Great Economy Project. It's at AmericanAgenda.com. And the goal here is really to start a movement that's going to focus on getting people to, you know, really understand and then take action to reduce extreme wealth inequality by raising taxes on the super rich and increasing minimum wage. More importantly, this is also about reminding people, especially people often left out of the political equation, to reclaim that political power that they've been told for years that they don't have. I think that a lot of people that we run into, you know, they come in, and a lot of what we're doing too is giving them data to back up their lived experience. So it's not just, you know, I'm struggling, this must be a me issue. It's that there are systems that are working against you. And, you know, in reality, everyday Americans are getting a raw deal right now. The system is rigged against them. The economy is rigged against them. And so, you know, you don't have something where you can bootstrap it. You know, that just doesn't exist. And I would argue maybe never did, but, you know, I think what we're doing here is really trying to remind people, you know, that it's beyond just like, oh, your vote matters. This is also saying, you know, you have a voice. These people work for you, and you need to remind them of that. And so that's what we're working on in Whiteville, and it's been going great. I've been loving it, you know. So yeah.
No, I mean, you know, when I talk about taxes with people, I always talk about the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower, and how the tax code worked back then, where the bigger your shoulders were, the more water you carried back to the cave. You know, the more we give, the more we expect from people. And that somewhat resonates, but I know you guys have gotten your elbow deep into this community. You hold events, you hold these meetings, you bring people together, and you've actually gotten them to go out and carry on the message and create little activists, because I know you guys are coming out with a movie that I cannot wait to see. But do you find that, you know, that there's an epiphany moment when you're talking to people? Because, you know, politically, you know, folks are dug in. You know, I have Republican friends who believe, no, we can't raise taxes. Raising taxes is bad always. It's never good. It's going to kill jobs. It's all the. And on the other side, no, we have to have high taxes. Do you find that people are dug in and after a bit of, education, maybe they come somewhere to the middle on this? Do you see that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think another thing to point out here is that a lot of people do agree on this issue. Our real strategic thing is, can we make this their issue? Can we point out that the other things are noise and distractions, or if we increase taxes, how much better these other things that they're struggling with will get, right? And so I think it's a few things, but really, you know, we put together this curriculum and tried to see, like, what's the moment? But a lot of them just, you know, when we explained, you know, pretty much just even like the slide of like FedEx, like if you had a FedEx package shipped in 2022, you paid more in federal taxes than FedEx did. Like, those moments for people, I think, are really eye opening to how this system is actually working. And so you see people kind of go through a transformation of, you know, maybe this is an issue, but it's not my issue, to, okay, I'm upset about this. And then, what do we do about it? And right. it's been incredible. Yeah.
Yesterday on the program, we had someone on from Jobs with Justice, and they just came out with a report that showed the tale of two retirements, where, you know, the average everyday working person has a 401k. I think they could put up, you know, $22,000 a year into this 401k tax deferred. But if you're in the CEO class, you can put away unlimited numbers. And they pointed out a couple of these CEOs, like the guy from Centene, the largest Medicaid provider in the country, he had a deferred pension plan of $328 million. And that wasn't even the biggest. This guy from the, this Ryan Holmes, I guess it was, you know, had like I think it was like $400 million in deferred money that, you know, you go, how is it you get away with paying taxes and getting, and then as they explained, they go to Florida, then you'll pay anything. And there's always a loophole for the very well-to-do, where average everyday working people, man, we get hit every single time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think too, I mean, the point of this movement is to demand that, like, it won't happen overnight, as we know, you know, hardly any movements are overnight, but it's about demanding that they start to actually take the steps to close those loopholes. Because I think that, you know, I mean, when we talk about, you know, for some people, we'll talk about, you know, we do a survey and it's like, what's the best decade? Like, when did you think America was thriving? You know, when was that? And, you know, if they talk about a lot, you know, some of them will talk about, oh, like the, you know, after World War II, this is when I really felt like things were good. And so we'll talk about, let's look at the tax rates then. They were incredibly high on the wealthy, you know, and so, like, let's look at the difference that made. And I'm from Detroit, you know, we've been really hit, but we saw Detroit really get built up, you know, those Sears kit houses and Dearborn, things like that, you know, and these communities, they need that reinvestment, and they need the rich to pay their fair share.
Yeah. I kind of hate that fair share argument, because, you know, that's subjective. Look, the reality is, we need investment in communities so that rich people can get rich. Because they didn't just happen. The investments that taxpayers have made over the years with our roads and our bridges, our education system, our court system, you can go on and on about the investments that were made and that needed to be maintained. Sorry, if you benefited from it and you benefited from it mightily, you should have to pay for it. I got in trouble with someone not too long ago because I said, you know, if I were back in the Eisenhower era, I would be thrilled to pay the 92% tax rate. And so, oh, that's idiotic. I can't believe it. I go, no. I would be thrilled, because it would mean I was making a freaking ton of money. I would be really rich. And what you guys have, or what Patriotic Millionaires have put forth, is, I think, like, you know, going up to like 80% over $100 million a year or something. I would love to pay that, because it means I'm making $100 million a year.
Yeah. Well, and if you're making that much, there's a reality where how much are you going to miss that money compared to somebody like, you know, that's working a minimum wage job who every penny counts. You know, my background, I worked minimum wage for a decade of my life. And so I remember, you know, working 60 hours and coming up short on rent. And those were that's the hardest I've ever worked. And I'm not saying I don't work hard here. I absolutely do. But it's a different thing, right? And every penny counts when you live like that. And so, you know, Morris Pearl, who's the president of our board, talks about, you know, the difference, you know, $50 is to somebody that's super rich versus somebody that's working for a living. You know, it's just inherently a different thing. And so where like the $50, I mean, he's glad to have it. It's just completely different. Yeah. You know, it's a different dollar.
And we learned that during the pandemic. I mean, we saw what just a couple hundred dollars a month did to child poverty rates. We saw with just a little bit of investment and help for families did to bring down childhood hunger, to bring down, you know, all kinds of societal problems. It's just remarkable to me. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Kat Hadley. Kat is the state campaign manager for the Great Economy Project. You can check out their website, AmericanAgenda.com. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that. Now, you know, I want to get back to what you're doing because I think it's really important and hopefully scalable and something you can move into other areas as well. As you're going through this stuff, do you see kind of an empowering sense? Because one of the things that I talk about all the time is, you know, when people take on an issue, they get a sense of empowerment that they can change things. When they feel that power as a labor activist, you know, I've always felt that power of that I can change things. Do you see that happening in a place like Whiteville?
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, that's the thing that drew me to this, because I remembered as like a, I'm not going to say like, but when I was new to organizing, it was realizing that A, I wasn't alone in the experiences that I was having, and that B, like policy can change this. This is a changeable system. And so we've seen people go from, you know, I'm showing up for a free meal, maybe I'll listen to what they'll have to say, to, you know, we have, you know, people like April who, like her and her partner are out flyering at an event with their kid, you know, like people are bringing their kids and handing out flyers and just talking to their neighbor about the minimum wage and about a path forward. And, you know, so it's been really incredible to watch that. And, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, how can we make sure that, you know, they'll come up with all these great ideas. They're like, you know, we want to talk to city council about this, because even though they can't change it, maybe those people will be asked to run, and then they'll know this is an issue that the people in their city care about. And they're absolutely right that happens. I'm an elected library board person, a trustee in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And you know, when we talk about who's going to run next, it's that pool of people that we pull from often, you know? And so I think that they're really doing amazing things. You know, we're working on some, you know, they want to know how to advocate. They want to know how to make their voice heard. So we're doing things like there's a petition on the website now that they're getting people to sign. And we're going to, you know, help them take that to their elected leaders and say, you know, these amount of people in your city all want a higher minimum wage. How are we going to make this happen? You know, how are we going to get to the table to actually make change on this issue? So we've absolutely been seeing people want to generate that change and do those things. And I think that's incredible, because, you know, once you get turned on as an organizer, it's like, it's so impossible to stop, right? Like, you know, and, you know, I think it's going to be really incredible to see, you know, how this program can shape not only, you know, what people are doing on the ground now, but in 5 years, you know, if those people say, okay, I've asked them to change this for 5 years, maybe I'll run for office. You know, like these are the things that can start to happen. And these are people that, you know, some of them have never been political in their lives, you know, and these are people also from across the aisle. You know, we have people from Republicans, Democrats, independents, hate them all. We have everybody in the room. And when we focus on the economy and how this impacts them and how this can improve, you know, we're not seeing a lot of like that tribalism, all that stuff that we're told over and over again. I mean, there's so many things. Like, I came in and I thought, oh, well, a lot of people will think that they'll be millionaires someday, so they won't want these tax systems, because that's something that I've heard through polling and other places. We've never heard anyone say that, you know, and we have people that are staunch Republicans saying it should be $18 an hour minimum wage in Whiteville, North Carolina, you know, And no one's ever been like, I am against raising the minimum wage. We've never run into that.
No, we just get conservative politicians who do that. So now you're currently in Whiteville, North Carolina. You're going to expand this. I understand going into where I'm at in Pennsylvania, also into Wisconsin. And I'm curious, what do you expect to find in those areas? More of the same? Any thoughts of the differences or similarities?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so I think it's going to be really interesting what we find as we move forward. You know, I'm really excited for Wisconsin, especially because I'm in Michigan, so I can pop right over. But, you know, I think we're going to, you know, there it's just it might be slightly different. But the thing is, like, most people agree on these issues and I think want that empowerment and that sense of empowerment. So, you know, there's a chance that, you know, when we're moving forward, we're picking smaller towns on purpose. You know, we want people where if you told one person, 10 people heard it. You know, that's what we're looking for. And so I think it'll be really interesting to see how that scales and grows. We also have an online cohort for anybody that would want to join. We're starting that up in June really quick. You can go to AmericanAgenda.com and sign up and learn everything we're talking about and go through the program yourself. And, you know, so it'll be interesting to see how that goes. You know, in Wisconsin, I think from what I'm looking at, it's a little higher income. So, you know, maybe the taxes will be more of the focus than the minimum wage will be. But, you know, honestly, who knows? And it's an exciting
Exciting what you're doing. And look, I'm looking forward to taking the online part of it and participating in Pennsylvania where I can, because I think this is one of those issues. And I talk about this all the time. You know, what's that issue that's going to reunite the country, going to bring us back together, revive us to be part of a community again? I often say that the way I believe it's going to happen is through the labor movement. But this is a much bigger project than I think could really be substantial. And I hope folks will check out the website, AmericanAgenda.com. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Last question I've got for you. In looking at this, what's the one memory that you go, this is why I do this? Is there one story, one thing that pops out at you as, oh my gosh, I didn't think this was going to happen. This was the most memorable moment in this.
Well, I feel like I'm very lucky in that there are many that come to mind. But I think seeing, you know, we've been lucky enough to have a documentary crew follow us.
Right.
So one thing that was really interesting was, you know, I have the perspective as an organizer working, you know, soup to nuts with these people, you know, and seeing that growth in that way. But to watch them in this documentary go from, you know, like I think of like Evelyn, who's in our cohort, where, you know, it's like, you know, she's there, she's nice, she's saying hi, you know, whatever. And now it's like Evelyn's out there, you know, she's got an oxygen tank and going to festivals and like walking around and talking to people about the minimum wage. And, you know, she was talking to somebody from South Carolina and she's like, well, I gave him a flyer because we'll be there soon. But just like to see people believe this and believe in change for maybe the first time in their life, maybe the first time in forever. Like, I think that that to me makes everything 100% worth it. And I think if we can continue to do this and remind people of the power that they have, that the politicians work for them.
No. Look, as a labor organizer and as an activist, that's always been right there, spot on, the thing that I find most encouraging. When you see someone finally get it, when you know that they feel the power that they have collectively, that to me gets it too. So I wish you guys the best. I hope you'll come back and share more. Whatever we can do to help pass this along, I'm here for you, Kat. I appreciate the time, though.
Thank you so much. You have a wonderful night, and we appreciate all you do.
You as well, Kat Hadley. She is the state campaigns manager for the Great Economy Project. You can check out their website, AmericanAgenda.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, for me, the tax thing is a big one, because I do think it's one of those things that can bring us back together. When you start going, look, we don't have the spending problem that Republicans keep claiming we do, because we're a society that believes we need to help people. We need to help, people who are struggling. And I look at myself. Look, I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. We didn't live high off the hog, but we got by, and it was because of a lot of government programs. I mean, we were on and off ADC a number of times as my mother couldn't find work, and then last one hired, first one fired, and things were tough. We lived in assisted housing, because of, the housing project is what it was, and it helped us get by. Was it great? No. Could it have been better? Absolutely. And it should be better. But you have these people and this is where my frustration is. My frustration is that you have these folks who would kick people while they're down. They thinking that life, on the dole is some, wonderful existence. It's not. Sorry, it's not Club Med. It's hard. It's difficult. It takes a skill set. And I think a lot of people during the pandemic figured out it's hard to be poor. It's hard to navigate these social programs. It's hard to jump through the hoops. It's hard to swallow your pride and dignity. But at the end of the day, you've got to do a lot of these things because you got to support your kids. You got to keep a roof over your head. And what's frustrating to me is you have these Republican leaders who that's all they want to talk about is slashing and burning that. Never about, hey, how do we have a tax code that still rewards work and wants people to work, but that distributes wealth in a way that benefits society as a whole? And I know, you're talking about redistribution of wealth, and I'm going, yeah, I do. As a labor person, and this is why when people remember the 50s and the 60s, and they remember it positively, because wages were higher. Working people got a bigger share of the economic pie. The CEOs were making maybe 20, 30 times that of what the workers were making, not 300 or 400 times. And the wealth was distributed, which meant one income could support a family, buy a house, buy a car, take vacations, put kids through school, one income. I argue you need three incomes today. It's no longer just two. And that's because our tax code is so badly screwed up. I want everyone to work. I want everyone to have a job because I do believe there's a therapeutic quality in work. There's that sense of accomplishment, of a job well done, that sense of pride and dignity that you get from that. I think there's a lot of positives. But to say, well, we're going to have an absolute mandate and everyone has to work. Okay, great. I'm in favor of that. But you can't mandate something and then go, oh, it doesn't exist. Or there's no way for people to get to it. This was my experience growing up. Okay, let's say there was a mandate. We weren't on the bus line. There were no jobs in the neighborhood. So where did people work? They didn't, because there was nowhere to work. Now, if you're going to mandate that, don't you have to have the mechanism to ensure that their work is available, that people are able to get to it, that they have childcare, that all of the things that I think a lot of us in the middle class world take for granted, the invisible capital that we assume everyone benefits from. And sadly, a lot of our poor and struggling don't, especially low wage workers, because the other part of this is the majority of people who do get help from the government actually work. That's the weird part of this. It's just that they make such low and crummy wages that they qualify for these benefits. What I say is you raise it up so that they don't qualify. Raise their wages. Make it sufficient that corporations are paying the freight and not taxpayers. And this is where I come back to my belief in labor unions. Give people the ability to join and form unions, fight for better wages, hours, conditions, and the dignity that comes with it. It seems like something that could revive us, could reunite us, if only we were to reunionize, rejoin each other in the public square. I want to hear your thoughts. Agree? Disagree? I lost my mind? Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1986. That was the day that more than 5 million people participated in Hands Across America. The event was organized to raise money to combat the problems of homelessness and hunger in the United States. People agreed to donate $10 to stand in their place in line for 15 minutes. The line was supposed to link people hand in hand from New York City through 17 states to Long Beach, California. The event gained support of corporate donors, including the Coca-Cola Company and Citibank. Initially, the plan drew the ire of President Ronald Reagan, who claimed, quote, "I don't believe that there is anyone going hungry in America by reason of denial or lack of ability to feed them. It is by people not knowing where or how to get this help." The president refused to acknowledge how factors like the loss of industrial jobs and the decline of labor unions contributed to families having hard times making ends meet. Eventually, President Reagan got on board, forming part of the chain in Washington, D.C. He was joined in line across the country by everyone from Oprah to Chewbacca and Mickey Mouse. The event was projected to raise $50 million, but not everyone turned in their pledge contributions, and staffing costs ate into profits. In the end, the project raised about $20 million. In 2015, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development reported that there were more than 500,000 people homeless in the United States. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
If poobahs of the National Democratic Party wonder why working-class families, which once formed the party's solid base of political support, have gone astray, they might ponder the awful message they're sending by constantly smooching Senator Joe Manchin's tail. The multimillionaire West Virginia coal baron and anti-democratic Democrat is demanding that a massively polluting pipeline named Mountain Valley be rammed through rivers, watersheds, national parks, and down the throats of the people of West Virginia, Virginia, and North Carolina. Why? Money. The senator's fossil fuel funders, who own the project, want the federal government to mandate construction of their corporate boondoggle. For a decade, gutsy grassroots groups have rebelled and defeated these Wall Street profiteers, and the people of this Appalachian region are still adamantly opposed. But here comes Biden to rescue Manchin and his fossil fuelers with a dirty backroom deal overruling the will of the people, proclaiming that he wants to advance America's conversion from fossil fuels to renewable energy. Biden is pushing a bill to make it easier and faster to get federal approval for new energy projects. Fine. But his bill specifically greases the skids for more fossil fuel projects. And guess which one is the first in line for quick approval? Yes, Brother Joe Manchin's Mountain Valley Pipeline. Pumping frack gas through three states would produce a mess of leaks and spills, but the project would also emit some 40 million metric tons of planet-warming gas a year, equivalent to the annual pollution of 10 coal plants. As the Natural Resources Defense Council puts it, we won't build the clean energy economy of the future by doubling down on the dirty fuels of the past. This is Jim Hightower saying, for information and action on this raw deal, connect with Appalachian Mountain Advocates, appvoices.org.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So lots to get to. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Mark in Illinois on line three. Mark, how are we doing today? Got to get Mark into the queue. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Thanks for having my call, Mr. Smith. I just want to say it was a breath of fresh air to hear you talk about the tax code. I strongly feel that that would help a lot of issues in America. And it's funny, I'm usually fiscally conservative. I had a three-hour conversation with my brother who lives in California, and we were talking about just how divided America is. You know, he's a lot more liberal than I am. But, yeah, uniting the country would be nice. We feel things are more tribal. But I keep telling him this tax code thing, it just leads to so many issues, you know, whether you're liberal, conservative, middle. And it's just a breath of fresh air to hear you say that. And, again, I'm fiscally conservative, and it's just amazing how much money goes away and out of control by not having a tax code that the simple taxpayer can understand, you know? 8 pages. Why is it so hard, right?
No, look, our tax code is difficult for a reason, so rich people can get away with jumping through loopholes. I would like to see it simplified as well, but I would also like to have it go back to the days of the good socialist president, Dwight Eisenhower, where the bigger your shoulders, the more water you carry. You know, we had, right? I think, 1,000 tax rates during the Eisenhower years.
And the dollar, the power of the dollar and what you can get in the 50s and 60s or even 40 years ago, I mean, yeah, I was talking to my brother about that, and I said, Joe, the power of the dollar is crap right now. I said, it's so diluted. I said, here, you can only get it two ways. You tax or you print it. And I said, the promise of the American dollar, put it back on the gold standard, shrink the tax code, and then you see how lean you're forced to be and how it benefits everyone across the board. Putting it back on the gold standard, that might be just as challenging as reducing the tax code.
That'd be impossible. It'd be impossible to go back to the gold standard. There's not enough gold.
And how do you deficit spend? I mean, you tell any household, spend on a deficit. That's not possible. You're not leading by example, and it's not healthy. And, of course, 78, you know, what do you say, debt ceiling increases. I'm just saying, as a taxpayer, I guess I would expect them to kind of balance the budget and kind of know, you know, how are you going to fund something? I mean, why would
Mark, this is where I think we can agree. I think what you have to do is you have to raise revenue like most households do when they're running a deficit. You don't fix the hole in the roof. If you've got a hole in the roof, you got to make more money, you got to bring more money in. And if you need to borrow, you borrow. I'm not against borrowing, especially if you're investing in it ways that are gonna help us down the road.
If it's done right, you got income coming out, if you have expenditures going out, and if you pay the working man more, we're gonna spend more. There goes the GDP. Now the economy's kind of going around. And you know, with printing money falsely, I mean, we see inflation. Now you got to raise rates. You raise rates, no one wants to buy a home now because the cost of a home ownership is, I mean, there's so many reasons just to kind of get in check, gold standard, reduce tax code. I mean, I seriously feel that everyone wants to get to that end point. They just have different ways to go about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, other motives get in the way, and that's kind of what needs to be kept in check. There's no performance review with someone, you know, in Congress or the Senate. I mean, here, if I didn't show up for a session or I didn't show up for work, I'd be fired. I have to go through performance reviews if I want to raise. Not one politician goes through that. We call them elections. But sometimes I think a shorter leash to hold people accountable, that might be a good thing. I don't know.
What do you think? I'm with you. I'm not with you with the gold standard. I don't think we can go back to that. But I'm with you on the tax code and bringing people back together on good spending versus bad spending.
So oh, yeah.
There's a lot of good Mark.
They want to make currency digital now. They want to go cashless.
I'm opposed
to
that.
I've been to places where they won't accept my American greenback. And I said, that should be a federal offense. That just sends the wrong message. It's just me, though. Maybe I'm extreme. But, thanks again for your call. I appreciate it. And you have a good night. Enjoy your holiday weekend, sir.
You too, Mark. Thank you so much. No, I don't think we can go back to the gold standard because there isn't enough gold in Fort Knox to cover what we've already got, and it's restrictive. Look, there are times where you need to borrow money. There are times that you need to expand, and then there are times when you need to contract. When times are tough, like during the pandemic, maybe you need to borrow to help. When times were good, as they were during the Clinton years, that's when you start paying things back. Let's go to the phone. Got my good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, on the line to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thank you, Rick.
So I got to get your thoughts on evidently, I don't know if you saw this, and I know you keep saying that Trump is not going to be not going to go to jail for the documents thing, but I got to tell you, it's not looking good for him. When it's been reported that they staged kind of a, how'd they put it, kind of a charade around moving the documents around, like a practice moving the documents around, seems kind of like an intent kind of thing going on there.
Well, if we look at this whole thing, because you know this story, of course, is where the employees moved boxes. And it was, it was all the time, but it was before the big part of the story. It was the day before the DOJ went to Mar-a-Lago. Right. So, you know, obviously, when you read that, you're like, okay, why did they move them, and why the day before were they moving them? And they have evidence that this was kept in a visible place in the office. It was shown to others. So this is all coming out. I'm still going to argue, though, that the Justice Department will not pull the trigger, and part of the reason is that Trump is going to have protection of, you know, who handled the boxes, did he actually order them to be moved, and if he did, why was it, so they could clean? I mean, there's just so much to this. You know he would say that.
Yeah, yeah, oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's... Nothing I make up.
It was Ivanka's fault. Look, he's gonna throw everyone under the bus to save himself. But what's interesting is it's being reported by Rolling Stone that his lawyers are saying, "Hey, maybe you need to prepare for this," because his lawyers seem to think it's coming.
Right. Well, the one lawyer for Trump, they have a lawyer for the Trump employees. By the way, they have a lawyer for Trump and a lawyer for the Trump employees. But one of the lawyers for the Trump employees said that his client had been trying to help Trump, a Trump aide, I guess his name was Walt Donata, I don't know if I got that right, and didn't know what the boxes held. And they were seen on, of course, security video, moving boxes into the storage area. And then they said, well, this guy, Mr. Donata, volunteered to help move the boxes, which raises a really particular question of volunteers. Were the cook and the cleaners moving classified documents around? I mean, really?
Yeah.
When you look at it, I mean, it's just as ridiculous as can be. But I still am going to argue that the Justice Department will, not take something that they can't absolutely 195% slam dunk. Right now, I just don't know if justice has the will. I guess that's my point.
No, we'll see what Jack does. I'm interested to see how this goes. Also, want to get your thoughts on Rona McDaniel. Rona says that the a default would benefit Republicans.
Well, I don't know what magazine Rona is reading or what. I know she had an article in Vanity Fair or something, so I don't know what she's basing it on. But this is a no-win, and it's a no-win for anybody. Again, if you look statistically, 39% of the people are going to blame Biden, and 39% of the people, Biden and the Democrats, but more Biden, and 39% of the people will blame the Republicans is what's going to happen. So Rona McDaniel can dream all day long that the default would bode, her quote was, very well for the GOP.
Yeah.
You know, with corporate America, what's going to happen, Rick? You know it, and I know it, and we've talked about it. If this goes into default, the corporations are going to be speed dialing the Republican members of Congress, and a certain amount of Republican members of Congress are going to freak. And then after the fact, if this happens, then after the fact, they try to resolve the thing after they've jumped off the diving board and the pool's empty. So she's wrong. This cannot benefit them whatsoever. Now, if they want to beat the drum of balancing the nation's budget, take it through the process, budget by budget, line item by line item, bring out their amendments, that's fine and dandy. That's the process.
Yeah.
Doing this here, and holding to it and causing the default, that is not the process.
No, and look, I want a budget process. I want us to debate spending. I want us to spend on the right things. I want us to be fiscally responsible. We haven't done that for quite some time, and things have gotten a little bit out of hand. I don't think we're in as much trouble as the right wants us to believe. Most households in this country are in much worse debt than the country's in. But you know, it's one of those things that you gotta start looking at.
Yeah, sure. You have to look at it. And then here's the other thing. Politically, I mean, I wouldn't wish default on anybody.
Nope.
And if anybody thinks, well, okay, wow, it's the default and Biden defaults and look what it's going to do to him, or the Republicans default, look what it's going to do to them. What's going to be relevant is what it's going to do to the country and how do you drag it back. And the Chinese are waiting for this to happen. They want to be the world currency.
Absolutely.
This is just another spike in the coffin.
No, and this is the part that just... this is short-term political thinking on the Republicans' part. They think that, and Rona and Gates, Gates with his, why would we negotiate with the hostage? This kind of nonsense is short-term thinking. Oh, this is going to be bad for Biden in 2024, but it's going to be bad for the country going forward, because if we do lose that reserve currency status, then things get a lot more difficult. Then, as we had a caller before, so we need to go back to the gold standard. Yeah, that's never going to happen, but things are going to get a lot tighter if we're no longer the reserve currency.
Well, no, you're correct, and I'll throw this out here. If we're no longer the reserve currency and you start to see the oil countries convert off of the dollar into, the yuan, the Chinese currency, then we're in big-time trouble, too, in many, many ways.
Listen to the Rick Smith Show here with former Ohio Congressman and political analyst Bob Ney. I want to get your thoughts, Bob, on the on our white bin Laden, Stuart Rhodes, 18-year sentence for seditious conspiracy. Is that enough?
18 years? I thought that the guy that put the feet on the desk should have been should have gotten more time.
Yeah.
But you're talking about the. From the Brookings article?
Well, I call him White Bin Laden. His name's Stuart Rhodes, the founder of the Oath Keepers.
He
was sentenced today to 18 years. His Florida partner, Kelly, male guy named Kelly Meggs, he got 12 years for seditious conspiracy.
There was the reason I said there was an Al Qaeda Today 18 years later article today. From Brookings, and I thought maybe that's what you were talking about at first. I'm all for sentences. I'm all for long sentences on this. It was serious. I was dismayed when this first began because the sentences were light. I thought heavy sentences at first would create more plea deals. I think this sentence could create more plea deals and wrap this up. Think it could.
Well, I hope so. Look, at the end of the day, and what I want the Republican Party to do is denounce this. I mean, you saw Trump on CNN say he would consider pardoning all these criminals.
Right.
DeSantis, during his failed launch on Twitter yesterday, said that he would consider also, pardoning not just these criminals, but Trump as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, when I saw the statement by Trump, I was just so dismayed to come out and say, hey, I'm going to pardon these people. They've been through the process. And, Stuart Rhodes right now is the longest sentence, and is the first defendant, I think, convicted of sedition, isn't he? I think so.
Yeah, him and this Meggs guy, they were both convicted of seditious conspiracy. First since, I guess, 2010 is what I read.
And it's the most severe penalty. In more than, there's 1,000 criminal cases stemming from this attack in the Capitol. And I think it's the first to have been given to any of the main members of the Oath Keepers. So this is a sign out there. I will bet you there'll be some plea deals after this one.
Yeah, well, I hope so. Look, let's get these people locked up.
It's sedition.
Also want to get your thought on our Supreme Court, our corporate Supreme Court. Our quote of the day from Sheldon Whitehouse, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse from Rhode Island. The polluters paid for this court. And this is part of their reward, talking about the decision today to basically roll back the Environmental Protection Agency's power to rule on water, clean air and water. You know, thoughts on again, moving back from letting the EPA regulate the water and air and all that?
Well, what's going to have to happen, it's going to be tough now with the control of the House. But as far as the rollback, it will not be good for the country, obviously. It'll be dangerous. I don't know if, there's enough pressure to get X amount of Republicans on board with this, to codify this. And the court, of course, has been going after, overreach or the fact that the Congress didn't do this or the White House didn't do that. So the only thing I think that can happen is if there's something put together and it's done during the election year and hammered out. And again, there are potential combinations of if the Democrats hold firm on it, of acquiring a certain amount of Republican votes, possibly.
Yeah. Now, what I found interesting.
That's the long way around.
Yeah. What I found interesting is one of the articles, I put it this way. It said, in a concurrent opinion pushing for even less regulatory power, Thomas and Justice Neil Gorsuch said their Supreme Court colleagues narrowly ruled what the term waters means, but not the scope of EPA powers. So we're defining what waters are. That's all this was really about. But right. it's constricting the ability of the EPA to regulate these marshlands and regulate what can be dumped into them. So right. I got to assume this is a win for corporate America.
Oh, yeah, I believe so. And the Supreme Court, of course, is what they're doing. This is what's really interesting about this ruling, too. They created, I'm going to say created, a more stringent test as to whether the Clean Water Act applies, and in the course of the wetlands. But what's interesting about it is the Supreme Court now, in my opinion, micromanaging and creating stringent tests of the system. So I thought it was quite a bizarre way to rule on it, and it basically is going to attack the Clean Water Act, which is. Been here quite a long time.
Yeah, no, this is one of those things where, we've been talking about for a while here on the program about, could this be the end of the Chevron doctrine, which has been in place for a while, that gives these regulatory agencies, because they have the expertise to regulate themselves and to do what they think is necessary without, everything being explicitly written out, because you can't explicitly write every single thing out. Of what these experts know, you've got to defer to their knowledge and their ability to do what the law's intent was, and not just the letter of the law. At least that's how I understood it. But this shows me that that's going to be by the wayside very soon.
Right, because again, they're getting into creating the stringent test, not just the ruling. It's almost like they're making law within law. And then the other thing that I don't know if it's being talked about that much, but it should be, is the fact that under these rulings, then the long wetlands that were regulated forever, in the United States and were covered by the Clean Water Act, they were under it, not only affects water quality, but according to what I read today, flood control throughout the United States is going to be affected. Flood control throughout the U.S.,
that's just peachy. Finally, I want to get your thoughts on John Roberts' statement that they're going to take care of themselves, that they should be left alone. They're going to adhere to the highest standard of conduct. They've signed on evidently to a memo, and evidently he's dismayed. Dismayed that judges are heckled and shouted down at law schools. Protesters are outside the homes of justices. He doesn't think they should need 24-hour protection. But I don't think he sees why people are so angry with the court.
His first comments after this whole Clarence Thomas fiasco was Tuesday night. That's the first mistake, I think.
Yeah.
Because if nobody's going to step in, and the Department of Justice is not stepping in, and the Congress can't step in, et etc., then Roberts is the one that has to do something as Chief Justice. And he now, you know, finally makes a statement. And of course, the whole Thomas thing, it's almost like it hasn't existed anymore. Where's his statements about, you know, looking into what Thomas did or didn't do and how they then changed their internal law, you know, on it? I was mentioned, by the way, on Morning Joe, by Morning Joe, about his friends went to jail for a trip, but Clarence Thomas is sort of running around and everybody's saying, oh, you know, he's being picked upon. I thought it was kind of an interesting article.
That is interesting. And what I find interesting also is Harlan Crowe, his, Thomas's benefactor, mm-hmm. He doesn't believe Congress should have the authority to oversee any of that. As someone who served in Congress, thoughts?
He wants to oversee it. Of course he doesn't want Congress to oversee it. Harlan wants to oversee it his way. And I think the most dismaying thing about this is the fact that, you know, is Roberts going to remain silent on this? What about point by point? Where does he stand on what Thomas did or didn't do? And if Thomas, you know, skirted the law because the law is not clear, then what does Roberts specifically do about this? And I think here's the worst part about it, Rick. Who calls Roberts to task to answer these questions? Who?
That's a good question. Who does?
Is he so above the law that, you know, nobody can dare question him because he is the Chief Justice and therefore it sits in his hands until we all forget about it?
Yeah, I mean, isn't that supposed to be Congress's job? You can impeach a justice.
Right. So if they want to change at some point in time, they've got to put pressure on him and he's got to answer questions, not just sit back and say, well, you know, I'm okay. I think we need to be at the highest conduct, but he doesn't want to tell how you get there.
That's it. The devil's in the details, as always.
That's it.
Bob, I appreciate the time. Have a great holiday weekend. I look forward to having you back again soon.
Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. Think Tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. So looking forward to the big holiday weekend, Memorial Day, the official, I guess, beginning of summer. I know my kids are thrilled about school should be over in a couple of days after that. It's the beginning, but we're ticking down to default day. Now we here at the show are going to be taking a couple of days off for the big holiday. And then we've got a retooling coming up in the 5th of June through the 9th. We will be running best of that week as we retool and revamp and new technology and stuff that I don't get yet, but we're going to figure it out. new studio space. Looking forward to that. We've been building towards this. So we're going to be taking a little hiatus, just a short period of time. I still want to hear from people. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to play some dates from our Working Class Hero tour. What I found really important about that tour is when you talk to people face-to-face, this is the important part for me. When you get in a room with people, agree with them, disagree with them, people are so much, much nicer to each other. Social media is, is what it is. It's a cesspool of us being the worst versions of ourselves. Nothing gets settled there. But when you come together in a room and you talk about issues, real issues, not just I have to win, I think we can change things. And I think we can have the country that we all want and do it in a way where we lift people up instead of tearing people down. And that is my hope. So I wish everyone a good holiday weekend. Enjoy friends and family. Enjoy time with each other. I'm looking forward to coming back. But again, happy you have a good holiday. Remember the meaning of the holiday and spend time with your family. I appreciate you tuning in. Love the thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic ABC Media app. News.